Well, I don't know about you. I've had a busy week. Like I said, I did a wedding yesterday. It was just it was one of those weeks that just time gets away on you. And unfortunately, I didn't have time to write a sermon. Luckily, I do have a guest speaker. So he's a bit of a pro in this area. We're doing a series called "Who Are You?" And it's based on the Book of Ephesians. And this guy knows all about the Book of Ephesians. So. I'm going to go get him. If you would be so kind as to welcome him, that'd be great. Well, good morning. Rob asked me to be here today, and before I came, I thought, you know, I would check out your town. It's nice. No, I mean it's all right. It's cute, you know. Some people would say it's quaint. It's a nice, tiny, little, itty-bitty town. Sorry, I don't mean to offend you. It's just, I come from a city. I come from a big city. Ephesus. 500,000 people. Second only to Rome in the empire. It's huge. It's amazing. The things we have in our city would blow you away. We have a library that you wouldn't believe. We have aqueducts. I mean, how else are you going to get water to 500,000 people? You know what I mean? All right, you don't. My favorite, though, is the theater. 25,000 people can fit into our theater. Have you ever been anywhere? 25,000 people all together, cheering, screaming at the top of their lungs, cheering on a victorious gladiator. It's incredible. I probably don't have to tell you what we're most famous for, though, right? Temple. The temple. The Temple of Artemis? No? 300 feet long, 150 feet wide? Nothing? It's one of the seven wonders of the world. Antipater said he had seen all seven wonders of the world, but the Temple of Artemis blew all the others out of the water, or something to that effect. I can't believe you haven't heard of it. Wait, you have heard of Artemis, haven't you? No? Man, I am in a small town. Well, let me tell you. In Ephesus, Artemis is where it's at. You have heard that people worship different gods and goddesses, right? That much you know. Okay. Do the names Apollo or Zeus ring a bell? Okay. All right, so I'll give you guys a little history lesson here. All right. When the Greeks came to Ephesus, they discovered a city with people who worshipped a goddess that was sort of like their goddess, Artemis. And so she became the main goddess of Ephesus. Artemis was the daughter of Zeus, the sister of Apollo. See, in Greek mythology, the top god is Zeus. And he's a bit of a rogue. You know, he likes to get around. His wife, Hera, her job is to try to keep him in line. But she's not so great at her job. So even though she has a number of children with Zeus, you know, Ares, Aphrodite, Zeus has more with other women. Leto is one example. Zeus met Leto, and together they had Apollo and Artemis. And so there's this argument going on between Leto and Hera and Artemis, and it just becomes this really messy ordeal. But I guess that's family, right? So I've heard. I mean, I don't really know firsthand experience. I mean, I've seen families, of course. I just never had much of my own. No one was ever really sure who Dad was, and Mom. Let's just say I was on my own from a pretty early age. You know, it was all right. You know, I did what I had to do. I got by. It wasn't easy, but whoever said life was supposed to be easy, right? Where was I? Oh, right, I was telling you about Artemis and our temple. You ever heard why our... You've never even heard of our temple. I'll tell you why our temple is so famous. Artemis herself sent down an image for us to worship. Have you ever heard of anything like that before? The goddess herself sent something down for us so that we could worship it. It's been there for centuries. I know what you're thinking. It's been there for centuries, then how do we know it was really sent by Artemis? Right? How do we know it wasn't just tradition, superstition passed down from generation to generation? Well, the truth is we don't. I can't know that. I just know what I've been taught. To be honest, I've always had a bit of an issue with it ever since I moved to Ephesus. That's right, I love my city. I just wasn't born there. My earliest memories are a place called Ankara, east of Ephesus. But like I said, I was on my own early. I did what I had to do, and that catches up with you. Sooner or later, it's just better to move on. And so I moved from place to place, just trying to get by, trying to survive, but always searching for something, too. I couldn't have told you at the time what it was, but now I know it was family. I wasn't looking for uncles and aunts or any of that kind of thing. I was looking for the feeling that you get from being part of a family, you know, the feeling of belonging. The idea that someone would notice you if you weren't there. I wanted to make a difference in someone's life. I wanted to make a difference in the world. And so I moved from place to place looking for this, and every step brought me closer and closer to Ephesus. I didn't think I'd be there long. I mean, I didn't think I'd find what I was looking for in a place like Ephesus. 500,000 people? How could one person make a difference? It was too big. I thought of it like a river, a raging river. And you don't try to stand up against the river. You don't try to divert it. You just try to get by without being swept away. And so my plan was to be there, see the sights, get on the next boat for somewhere, anywhere, it didn't really matter. First place I went was the theater. I gotta say, it's probably one of my favorite places. Like I said, it's so exciting to be there, just be a part of everything. Everyone yelling and screaming, you know, the sights, the sounds, sometimes even the smells. They just blow you away. I sort of think of the theater like the guts of Ephesus. The nitty-gritty, that's where it happens. But if the theater is the guts, then by far, the heart and soul of Ephesus is the temple. Now, I had heard of the temple of Artemis. But I still wasn't prepared for when I saw it. It was so beautiful. I mean, no wonder it's one of the seven wonders of the world. It's unbelievable. I can't even use words to describe it. It's just the craftsmanship that went into building such an incredible structure blows me away. But like everybody else, I was drawn inside. I mean, my thinking was, if the outside, which was made by human hands, was that beautiful, well, I assumed that the image that Artemis herself sent us must have been even more incredible. I think someone should make a saying about what happens when you assume too much. I was more than disappointed. I was actually angry. It was just, I mean, if you squinted and looked sideways at it, it kind of resembled a woman. That's about all I can say for it. It was just a hunk of metallic rock. That was it. And here they built this beautiful structure to honor it. It just didn't sit right with me. I thought, how could people be, like, how could you look at that and think there was anything special about it? I said, if this is the heart and soul of Ephesus, if this is what Ephesus is all about, if this is what it stands for, I have already given it way too much of my time. You know, I've seen what there is to see, and I found it wanting. So I was gone. I was on my way. I was on the next boat. I was going to... And that's when I saw them. In an alcove in the temple. It blew me away. There were these silver shrines, silver sculptures. They were there to honor Artemis, but I could not get over how intricate they were. I mean, I can understand how you carve wood. I can even understand how you can carve rock, but how do you carve metal? How do you carve silver? How did the craftsman make it do exactly what he wanted to do and make it so beautiful? I was mesmerized. I sat there and looked at them and stared at them. I looked at every angle. And I realized, this is the real treasure. This is the real treasure in the temple of Artemis, not that hunk of stone. I compared the two. I said, that is nothing compared to what these are. And I picked one up. I sort of ran my hands over it. It was even more amazing than I thought. I looked at it from all the different angles. And I was suddenly overcome with a desire to have it. Not to take it and sell it, although it would have kept me eating for months. Just to have it so I could pull it out whenever I wanted and look at it. Over the years, I'd become pretty good at this sort of thing, so very subtly palmed it, slid it into my cloak. That's when the arm grabbed me. Hand grabbed me around the arm. I tried to pull away, but it was like iron, just would not let go. I looked into the face of my captor. And rather than anger, I saw a smile. He looked at me and he said, "Which one do you like?" I could not believe how lucky I was. He hadn't seen me. It took me a second to find my words, and I said, I like them all. And he said, "Yeah, but which one are you going to buy?" Starting to feel a little smug with what I had gotten away with, I threw on the charm and I said, "Oh, even if I could choose, I could never afford one. But they're so beautiful, I'll take a memory with me. And I'll be able to remember it anytime I want." And I sort of started to turn to walk away. He wouldn't let go. In fact, his grip got a little bit tighter. He said, "No. You will become my apprentice. I will teach you how to build them. And maybe in time, you will earn enough back to pay me for the one you just stole." I caught and pulled it out. I tried to give it back to him. He wouldn't take it. He said, "No." He says, "I know talent when I see it. And I can tell from the way you looked at it. I could tell your appreciation. I know you'll make a great apprentice. Even more," he said, "I can tell from your great love of Artemis what an amazing apprentice you'll be." I didn't tell him it wasn't Artemis I loved. It was the art. I appreciated the craftsmanship. Demetrius was his name. He taught me everything I know, but not everything he knows. No, he'd always say, "There's more to learn. I am the master, you are the apprentice. Maybe someday you'll be the master, but not today. Here, let me show you." And then he'd teach me something new. It was Demetrius that gave me what I was looking for, at least far more than I ever hoped to expect to find in a city like Ephesus. It was a feeling of belonging. There's a feeling of family. See, we had what was called the brotherhood. All the silversmiths, people who worked with silver, we were like a little family. Some of them were actually family. Many of them were. But as long as you were one of them, you were in. And we stood together. In fact, it was like that for all the guilds. No matter what it was you worked with, there was like this group, this unity that said, we are together. We'll stand up for each other. There was this one time a copper worker came into town. He started selling without telling anybody. Alexander, our coppersmith, he raised up the brotherhood. We came crashing down on them, sent them on their way. I'd finally found that feeling of belonging. I gotta tell you, I love the work. Have you ever created anything? Bent something to your will to make it actually... The first few I made were terrible, but eventually, the more and more he taught me, the better and better I got. I found such joy, such pleasure in building them. And I'd hold it up, each one better than the last, and I'd say, this is my masterpiece. Demetrius would say, you are not a master. You are the apprentice. You can't have a masterpiece. But to me, they were. Each one was my masterpiece. And then I made another one, even better. It's become a pretty good life. That's not really how the story ends, though, is it? I try to get along with most people. I mean, you have to. In a city like Ephesus, there's so many different types of people that you have to get along. There was this one group, though. It wasn't that I had a problem with them. It's just they were so different from everybody else. The Jews. They had so many rules. They had strange clothing, strange hair. But the rules were the weirdest. Don't do this. Don't do this. Make sure you do this, but not on this day. I didn't understand any of it. Alexander did. He was a Jew. He was all right. He was one of us, after all. I didn't really care. But there was something going on with the Jews. It started in their synagogue. Yelling, shouting, shouting, yelling every day. Alexander tried to explain it to me. He said there was a troublemaker who had come to town. His name was Paul, and it was some new Jewish sect that had started up. Again, I didn't care. It's your religion. You take care of it. And he would try to explain to me. He said, but the thing is, they're not really Jews. And I'd say, I don't really care. All I wanted to do was just build my masterpieces. Demetrius, though, he cared. See, after a while, they kicked Paul out of the synagogue, and he went to go speak at a place in town, the lecture hall. And Demetrius would go all the time. And every time he'd come back, he'd be more and more angry about the things Paul was saying. He was saying that he was going to ruin everything for us. And I was like, Demetrius, one man. What kind of a difference can one man make? I tried to explain to him my theory of Ephesus like a river. You know, one man can't divert it. One man can't make a difference. He just try not to get swept away. Eventually, I said, Paul is going to get swept away. Let him say his piece and move on. We have nothing to worry about. But Demetrius wouldn't listen. He kept going and listening to what Paul said every time, getting more and more angry until one day he snapped. Paul had gone too far, he said. And so he raised up the silversmiths and we got all the rest of the guilds all up together. Demetrius said to them, do you know what Paul has just said? He said that gods made by human hands are not to be worshipped. Well, that did it. That riled the brotherhood up. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians, they said. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. They just kept shouting that over and over again. They started a riot. I started chanting along too. Last thing I want is that many people be angry at me. So I went along with them. Along the way, they found two of Paul's followers. They grabbed him and they pulled him. They were walking towards the theater. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. I slowly started to slip away to the side. I didn't want to have any part of what was going to happen in the theater. Got to the edge of the crowd, and I slipped away. See, there was one thing that Demetrius said that I couldn't get out of my mind. I had searched all over for something. And surprisingly enough, I found it in Ephesus, this sense of belonging, the sense of family. And Demetrius said that the way Paul was talking, he was going to take it all away from us. I didn't see how that was possible, but I thought, if it is possible, I need to do something. I need to stop it somehow. I need to try. And so I ran back to my workshop and I got my greatest masterpiece. Demetrius never would have admitted it, but it was even better than some of his work. And I went to go find Paul. I thought, I've heard he's a man of reason. I've heard he's a man of miracles. And so I prayed for a miracle. I prayed that he would listen to reason. That maybe if I explained to him what it meant to me, that he would move on. That maybe I could give it to him and say, this will pay for your trip out of town. If he was a man of reason, he must realize what's going on and want to leave. I didn't know what. I prepared a speech in my head, and I went looking for him. And I found him outside the theater. He was trying to get in. He saw me coming, and he turned to look at me. I was so overcome with emotion, I couldn't get my thoughts out. All I could say was, my masterpiece. And he looked at it. And at first I thought he was going to be angry with me. The look in his eyes was more like compassion, sadness. And he put his hands on my shoulders. He said, you are God's masterpiece. And then he walked away. There was something about the way he said it. So softly, so gently. My brothers were in the theater shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians!" Yet in his soft voice, the truth of what he said drowned them out. They were shouting in anger, but he spoke out of love. But as much as that, it was what he said. You are God's masterpiece. And I looked down at my own work. And I looked at my hand. And I realized that as beautiful as the thing I made was, it was nothing compared to the amazing hand I had. That hunk of stone in the temple was nothing compared to my sculpture, and my sculpture was nothing compared to me. If God feels the way about me that I felt about my sculpture, I had to know more. So I chased after Paul. I had to ask him the one question that had always plagued me, the one question that had always given me a hard time with religion. Alexander tried to tell me about his religion, and I said, how do you know? I mean, how do you know it's really from God? How do you know it's not just something handed down from generation to generation? And so I said to Paul, how do you know? You say I'm God's masterpiece. How do you know that? I'd always thought, you know, if God would speak to me directly, even if I were to have felt something that would change things. I'd been in the temple of Artemis 1,000 times, and I had never felt anything. That's why I asked Paul, how do you know? And he told me about his God. He told me that he had met him. His name was Jesus. He said that he had come down from heaven, he had died, and then he'd come back to life. And then he had met with Paul And even more than that, he gave Paul a purpose. And it changed his life. And then Paul said something that changed my life. He told me I had a purpose too. He said, your purpose is to be a part of God's family and to do God's work. I joined Paul's church. Of course, I lost my job as a silversmith. That was okay with me. You see, my brothers in the guilds, they worship an image that they believe was sent to them by Artemis. I worship a God who came to us directly. I worship a God who is alive today. I don't make sculptures anymore, but I follow the master sculptor, the one who created me. I told you that the temple of Artemis is beautiful. And it is. It truly is. But even in that beauty, someday it will fall. God is putting together his own temple. His own temple, built on the foundation of the apostles, men like Paul, with Jesus as the cornerstone, so it will never fall. And the master builder puts each brick piece by piece, and every single piece he puts in there is a masterpiece. When I first came to Ephesus, I settled for a feeling of belonging. I settled for a sense of family. But I found that in Jesus. And more, I found a purpose for my life. It's the same purpose for you. Our purpose is to do God's work. Our purpose is to live a life worthy of the calling. Live your life in such a way that every single person you meet, with your words and with your deeds, you say to them, you are God's masterpiece. Thank you.